How's it going, sports fans? And welcome to the biggest sports show in TO, Sports from the Six, here for episode number 29. I'm your host, Big Flip Livingstone, here with my beautiful co-host, Joseph Narsa. On the show today, Joe, what are we talking about, pal?
Well, the Leafs now have two starting goalies, apparently.
Apparently they do, and they keep rolling out west.
The LA Kings have gotten slower adding some depth.
And is it party time in Washington? Mike Richards joins the Capitals.
And there's a new blue jacket for Seth Jones.
A Music City miracle for Ryan Johansson, perhaps?
And the Raptors look for more magic in DC.
And on the gridiron, it's wild card weekend in the NFL, and I've got all your pick 'em needs in the Flips Picks segment. Joe, it's a special day for us, isn't it, pal?
Very much so.
Why don't you introduce our special guest for all our fans out there?
Well, sitting here today, we have the lovely Jess Patton, Toronto Sun reporter and writer, and Sports from the Six writer. Jess, how are you doing?
Most importantly, Sports from the Six
writer. Most importantly.
I was going to like, you know, hammer that in there. But I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me, boys.
Well, I mean, let's start off with probably the hottest topic in Toronto right now.
Other than Jess.
Other than Jess, because she's absolutely killing it.
Must be nice.
The Leafs have gone from who is going to play in net, why is Antoine Bebo here, and wow, those pads are unreal for Garrett Sparks, to, okay, who are we going to play? Both Bernier and Reimer are looking great, and Reimer is now, we hope, over another injury bug.
I think we, as Toronto sports fans, we're always talking about the Leafs first. It's second nature. You and I have hammered this topic, Joe, all year about the goalies. And it's just interesting because 1 month ago, you said it before the show, we would have for sure said Reimer was the man. And now 1 month later, Bernier's been earning his stripes and earning that number one spot back, like we kind of predicted, though, didn't we?
And that's how I looked at it. I mean, for me personally, even watching last night's game in L.A., watching Reimer play is an uncomfortable feeling to me. I mean, he's kind of skating around. He does a lot of swimming. He looks kind of out of his element sometimes, but he gets the job done. And we've seen goalies be successful like that. But when you watch Jonathan Bernier play, you can see a calm, you can see a collectiveness in his game. And that's where he's been successful. And I've said to you before, when Bernier's playing well, you see him out on the white ice, you see him challenging. And you haven't seen better than that in the last three games. It's potentially been the best Bernier's been for the Maple Leafs. But what's interesting is both goalies, they might be getting love from everybody else, but still the head coach doesn't really look to care about either one of them. He's frustrated on both levels.
You know what? I think we can bring up the Babcock thing after, because there's a few things that I want
right.
to touch on with Babcock, the Sox being one of them, potentially.
Big time.
But, you know, Jess has been seeing a lot of puck firsthand. And I think what I've noticed with Bernier the most, and I want to see what Jess thinks about this, is, and I talked about it, was his attitude. His attitude, when he was losing, he lost eight straight or seven straight, it sucked. It even sucked when he came back up after his decent stint in the AHL.
See, I totally disagree.
But what I think I see now is pushback. He's ready to play. He's angry. He's battling in there with Corey Perry the other night. The fire seems to be relit in his belly, and I hope that it's a prolonged thing, and I don't know if it is, and I'm interested to see if you think he can keep it up, Jess.
The interesting thing for me on the goalie front with the Leafs is that no matter what's been happening, I feel like for the past couple seasons, it's always been the notion in people's minds or the people who are making the decisions that it's Bernier is the number one. They gave him the contract extension, and regardless if Reimer's coming back, I feel like they still think that Bernier's the number one. And the most interesting thing for me was, you see, last year when Reimer was in the net, you could tell. I mean, the team had lost all hope anyways last year. No one wanted to be on the ice. But when Reimer was on the ice, you could tell that they were all scared. It's kind of like what you said with the uneasy feeling. And when Bernier was there, they stepped it up, and I think they knew that he would stop the puck. And it was interesting now, before Bernier went down, when Reimer was in the net, it was almost the opposite. But regardless, everybody always still thinks it's Bernie, and I don't really understand why. Maybe it is because Reimer plays kind of like the all-over kind of play. Like, I mean, Eddie Belfour flipped and flopped in the net too, but he stopped the puck.
He was also an alcoholic, though.
He was also an alcoholic. But
sorry about that, Eddie.
We're never going to get Eddie on this show.
No, Eddie.
Unless there's a Crown Royal bottle at each station.
So then we might get Eddie on the show.
It'll be a best shot.
I like what you're saying, though. Reimer does seem like he's a bit of a frantic goalie.
Yes.
So, Jess, were you able to cover the Leafs the night they played St. Louis at home?
No, I was not there
for that. So the last time you had gotten a chance to hang around the Leafs, what was the sense around their goaltending in comparison to what I kind of feel like the sense is now, that they have confidence in their goalies? Like, I heard Holland say after the game, you know, Rimes kept us in it. Rimes was absolutely big. He was a brick wall for us. We couldn't get the win for him. We couldn't score. In comparison to what it was like before, when everybody was questioning every goalie.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing to me, and I actually wrote about it, because what did Bernier go, like 0-8-2 or something before he even got his first win? And regardless of how poorly he was playing, or maybe he played well and they still lost, every single guy on that team, like, never threw him under the bus. And I get it, like, some of them, like, you talk to Phaneuf and stuff, and they'll give you kind of the generic, we believe in Ryan, like, we believe in Bernier, we believe in him, and he's our guy, blah, blah. But other guys, you can kind of tell, like, being standing there, like, I did a couple one-on-ones with, I mean, Polak talked to me, Holland talked to me, boys, like, all of them, and they all genuinely, like, you could tell that they all genuinely believed in Bernier and thought that he would come back, and they basically shouldered all the blame themselves. So it was an interesting kind of thing to see, because honestly, when Babcock did some press conferences and stuff in the topic of Bernier, you could tell, A, it was Babcock and he doesn't ever want to give you anything. But B, you could tell he was more than over Bernier.
Right, and you could see his frustration too in, like, James Reimer right now. I remember after the St. Louis game, right before they went on that road trip, Mike Babcock said, well, Rimes is going to come. We don't know what he's going to do. And everyone sat there.
It was like, almost like to me that Babcock, yes. And it was to me, it was funny because Reimer was out. He came back. He played for the third period. Then he was out again. And then he was supposed to start in Pittsburgh. And then he had to sit out again. And it was almost like to me that Babcock was kind of annoyed that he's injured.
Yeah.
And he kept repeating. He's like, I don't know. Last time he's like, they gave him the good to go. He went in. He was clearly not good, like, got good to go. So we have to give him the time. And it was almost like Babcock was not, I mean, personally mad at Reimer. You can't be mad at someone for being injured, but, like, I think he's just so fed up with having to go through, like, five or six freaking goalies, and we're still only halfway through the season.
I love seeing Babcock deal with the media, and personally, I heard the other day someone say, I'm not even sure who said it, but, you know, they're tired of hearing people ask Babcock about the goalies. You know, he shouldn't have to answer all these questions about the goalies, and I kind of chimed in with, the man's making whatever he's making, 40 mil over 8 years or whatever it 50. Is, he can answer those questions to the cows come home for all I care. And to be honest, I agree with you guys wholeheartedly. I think he tends to side with Reimer when he thinks about who his goalie is. But at the end of the day, he doesn't care, and he said it. Whoever wins is going in the net.
Exactly.
He's been very adamant about whoever plays good, whoever earns that net will get the net. It's not anyone's job per se. And we'd mentioned Babcock before and his attitude and this and that. And I want to ask you guys this, and I've heard this as well, is do you really want the Leafs to continue to play this good? Do you really want to see them win, quote-unquote win, finish in a spot that's going to get you an average to below average pick in the draft just because Babcock has got these guys playing so well? I heard the point that, is he too proud to just, you know, take the team and, you know, just finish in the bottom? He hates losing. He's got this team playing really good above what lots of people, including myself, expected them to do. And I know winning is winning and you never want to tank, but do you really want to finish in 8th or 9th in the division and then miss out on a chance at Austin Matthews?
I believe so, because when you look at the notion behind Mike Babcock, I think he's a mad scientist. Like, I also have this theory that his frustration with both his goaltenders might be a way to galvanize them together.
Definitely.
That he can sit there and Bernier can look at Reimer and be like, this guy hates us. Like, it doesn't matter what we do.
I love that word, by the way.
He's never frustrated.
Galvanized? Oh, amazing.
It's so good. It just makes me feel like metal. Like,
yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Oh,
no, that
yeah.
was nice. I want that on a, that's a band t-shirt. Like, galvanized.
Yeah, anyway. I'm so down. We're getting galvanized
New
t-shirts.
Band. Go ahead, sorry.
So I think what Babcock's point is that winning is not a fault. Winning is not an issue. Winning is what we do. But when you look at that notion of should we not win, should we lose, I apologize, to get a better player, listen, Edmonton might be playing better, but that's not necessarily proof in the pudding.
No, no, definitely not.
But let's look at something that's a little bit of a different situation. Mike Babcock's team in Detroit, other than the first 2 years when it was essentially Scotty Bowman's club, developed players that were drafted in the fifth round, in the fourth round, in the sixth round, mm-hmm. and we're still seeing that now with guys like Yurko, with Tatar, with Nyquist, with Zetterberg and Datsu.
Larkin.
Dylan Larkin. What those guys have learned is every player in the NHL has talent. The issue is, can you maximize their talent? And by winning and teaching players the way to conduct themselves and play the game is going to help develop the players a lot better.
I think it's a matter of, A, Babcock would never want to lose. B, I don't think any team in their right mind who wants respect is ever going to want to lose.
No.
And I think for me as a fan, obviously, it's kind of hard. It's like 50-50. But in a, from a sports perspective, it's watching them last year was painful to the point where I didn't want to watch them because you could tell no one wanted to be there. It was awful. This year, however, like they, it's Bozak's a new man. Komarov's having what? Like the
Uncle
most.
Leo's
Uncle Leo
favorite.
Is having the most incredible season ever. JVR has found new life. The whole team's found new life. And there's such a nice feeling around it that it's almost like I would. It's nice to see them being able to play, and it's nice to see them to be able to win. And honestly, the draft, yes, Austin Matthews, and they're the first couple Finnish guys. I always forget their names.
Oh, Puljujärvi and
the junior tournament that they had was phenomenal, and like they could give Austin Matthews a run for his money. But regardless, there's no guarantees in the draft, regardless if you're picking in the top five or whatever. So if you're gonna win and get your fan base back and get a core group and get the whole winning kind of feeling back in the organization, I don't think you should ever lose that because you want to have a better draft pick. Because, I mean, Edmonton's had how many first-round picks or
like
first overalls?
In a row or five
and,
in
like,
a row,
yeah, they're playing
like
better now, but it's still taking them
a million years.
And it's not even guaranteed, so I'd rather see the organization come back to, like, where...
I'm not even frustrated because I get what you guys are saying 100%. I would never want a team to lose, and I hate that attitude of tanking for a pick, even when, you know, the pick was McDavid. You know, tank for McDavid, like, I get it. But at the end of the day, you know, you do want to win. And the state of affairs in Toronto hockey a year ago, or not even a year ago, let's say 10 months ago when they had literally, under Horacek, I think they won like 1 out of 17 mm-hmm. in regulation or something like that.
Yeah. He's going to be remembered. Sorry to interrupt you. He's going to be remembered forever as a Leafs coach, but he's done nothing.
First of all, you never need to apologize for interrupting me.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And second of all, I agree. Third of all, what was I saying?
You were talking about winning.
Oh, right. Winning. Right. Yeah.
We forget that a lot in Toronto because we don't do much of it.
So here's my thing. It was just so negative last year that anything that they do this year, and don't get me wrong, now they are playing really good puck, 6-3-1 in their last 10 and beating good teams. My thing is, it's not just about, and you guys brought up the picks in Edmonton. The system isn't there for the picks.
Exactly.
The system is in place now for good, young, talented players in a Mike Babcock system to succeed and excel. You also have to look at the other young players that are coming up that could potentially play with a guy like Austin Matthews at center, Nylander and Marner. Those are a pretty nasty trio of young players. I know it's the draft and he could do anything. Mm-hmm. I just look at a player like Matthews after watching his junior tournament.
He's an NHLer for sure.
And he's got size, he's a center, everything the Leafs badly need. And I just look at it like winning is awesome. I much prefer it, personally.
But now let me give you an example, and this will be our segue to moving on off the Leafs.
Woo. Fancy.
If you have a house, and you've been in the same house for a while, and you feel like you need to sell it, the best way to maximize its value is to upgrade. Mm-hmm. To clean up the interior, to paint, to finish the basement, as all the guys in Woodbridge would say.
Dress it up.
You know, you gotta make it look nice.
Oh.
But Ew. Once you make it look nice, the problem is you might fall in love with it again. This Leaf organization, I don't think, has any false beliefs that P.A. Parento is a 35-goal scorer or that Leo Komarov is a consistent all-star.
Mm-hmm. No.
So I think the Leafs are going to fall into that middle land between what me and Jess are saying and what you're saying, in that the Leafs can win and develop because they're not going to keep the people that are overachieving because they're going to trade them away for value.
Yeah, it was a buy low, sell high.
Right. Mike Babcock's going to blow his head off. When Lou Lamoriello walks in, he goes, "Hey, you know Leo? He's gone." And he'd be like, "Why?" And he'd be like, "Because we got a first. Now shut up and go coach."
But that's my thing. One, just to throw something in there, the system's in place that Babcock system's in place.
Yeah.
It's working. It's turning players back into players. So it's almost like, why wouldn't you want to push it to see how well this group can go? And then you have the draft picks like Marner, you have Nylander coming up to plug it in because you already have the working system.
But what you're looking at, too, you got to remember is Leo Komarov is older, Bozak is older. I'm not saying they're 40, but when Marner and Nylander and Dermott and Timoshov are ready, they're going to be 24, and all those guys are going to be 33, 34. So what the team is able to do is maximize its abilities now and potentially trade them away. And that's what I'm assuming the Leafs are going to do going forward. And, you know, you look at certain deals, and sometimes you wonder whether you should have made them or not, because you could get into a situation where, like Jess is saying, you could have value in keeping that player. Or you could get max value trading him. And, you know, looking at what Columbus did,
mm-hmm.
that's where your maximum value is on, you know, Ryan Johansson, who I personally think could potentially be a number one center in the NHL. He's got all of the makings for it.
He's slated as a number one center.
He's shown it for 1 year, but what you've gotten now out of him is Seth Jones is a pretty damn good defenseman.
And he's
a big boy.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy, and you know what? I look at this deal like this. One, we probably won't see a bigger deal than this up until the trade deadline or after.
You don't think the Matthias deal is going to blow like for like what?
Unless Mark Arcabello gets traded, I don't care about any other trades.
Great point. Mark Arcabello, one shout out.
But to be clear, it was Ryan Johansson from the Blue Jackets going to Nashville for
Seth Jones.
Thank you, Seth Jones. Popeye Jones' kid. Shout out the old Raptor alumni. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good trade for both sides. They bumped into each other at the airport. You can check that out. That's kind of a cool story. But Ryan Johansson has been underperforming this year because this time last year, if you looked at this trade, you would have been like, what is Columbus doing? He's got only 6 goals, I believe. I looked at it before. 6 goals, 20 assists, so still
not bad.
25 points. And if that's underperforming, yeah. I think from Nashville's point of view, they'll take the risk on it. Also, you look at Nashville's decor, they have tons of good young defenseman, yeah. And the emergence of Roman Josi as a star defenseman has really made Seth Jones expendable in Nashville, and I like the move for both teams. I don't know what you think, Joe.
For me, I think I absolutely love the move for Nashville. I tweeted out, I think Nashville could be a cup contender, because when I was asking about Nashville, just talking to my buddies, I'm like, what are they missing? Like, you have Pekka Rinne.
They always think that Nashville's a contender. And
with Rinne, you're always a contender.
Crazy, yeah.
But that's the thing. You look at it, you're like, okay, Pekka Rinne, the guy's unbelievable. Then you're looking at having a guy like Shea Weber, now adding Roman Josi to that, not to mention still having Ryan Murphy developing. You look at James Neal, Mike Ribeiro, they have talent up front, but when you think of the West Coast, when you think of the Western Conference, right when you name a Stanley Cup champion, you name their number one center. LA Kings, Anze Kopitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Anaheim Ducks, Ryan Getzlaf. Chicago Blackhawks, Jonathan Toews. But then you get to Nashville, there's nothing there. The thing for me with Columbus is, how could you just... The fact that the GM and the president are... They were definitely sour on Johansson, because I don't think they're smart enough to get rid of a guy after 3 months of underperforming.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't think Tortorella was the biggest...
No, I think it was the ownership and the GM, because he held out on them, right? So I think they're sour on Ryan Johansson. But what's, for me, I'm looking at it, I think Nashville won this deal. But that's not saying that Seth Jones is not a great value for Ryan Johansson. He's potentially a number two defenseman in the NHL.
Potentially.
But I think the reason why Nashville wins is because that's a need they needed to fill. Columbus just added another hole, and David Poile said, yeah, it took us 18 years to find a number one center.
Yeah.
Now Columbus has to do that again, although they do have a defenseman.
And then last season they traded away Anisimov too, so it's like, yeah, you're getting a better, solid, more defensive core, but it's there's huge gaps up
it
front
does
now
seem...
for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, like, look at the hole that they're in right now in the season already, too. So you've got to think that Nashville kind of won this deal on that end.
Anytime I look at a trade, I always think the team that won gets the best player. Now it's a little bit more difficult to compare a young stud defenseman to a young stud center in terms of what the teams will get out of them. I still think Nashville wins the deal because...
Nice. Clean sweep.
I just think so because when you look at the piece fitting in there and then the piece fitting in Nashville, it looks like it completes a puzzle, whereas it gets a little bit messier in Columbus, if you know
what
I mean.
That's what I was going to say. Like, Nashville added the piece that they could push them to the next level of becoming the playoff contender or the Stanley Cup contender that they should have been in previous years. But yeah, Columbus is still a disaster up front. Like, Seth Jones is obviously a huge big boy and he's going to shut them down and give you some offense there, but their whole front line is now just kind of in disarray.
Well, and the one thing I also want to mention before we move on to the other deals that were made in the NHL is it seems like Tortorella, as much as maybe you said it was the front office moving Johansson out, I really think this was Tortorella going to them and looking like, I want Seth Jones.
See, that scares me. That really scares me. If you can let a coach like John Tortorella come in and make his decision on a player within 3 months, I'm not too big of a fan of that.
I think you want to say no to John Tortorella? Because he's got some crazy eyes there.
I would, but it's because I'm crazy as well.
John, whatever you want. John, just stop yelling at me. Keep your shoes on,
But
John.
Columbus is a mess, no?
Yeah, but okay, here's the thing. Columbus is potentially a mess, and I think their notion is that you build from the back up. So they got Bobrovsky. They have now...
Bobrovsky.
I like Bob, by the way.
I'm, like, decently on the fence? Good on... You know what? I can't get over the fact that Bob didn't have a stall when he was playing for Philly. He had to sit on, a chair and wear his gear on a chair to winning a Vezina. And, like, I don't know. I think he was a bit of a flash in the pan.
By the way, side note, how are we doing for time, speaking of flashes?
We still got about 15, 16 minutes, so
tops.
Don't leave.
Okay, thank you.
So what I'm looking at is I personally think getting rid of Johansson doesn't make sense, but getting Seth Jones and going into the draft with the potential ability of being a top three pick, like Jess said, there's two Finnish studs who Solani said reminds him of Matt Sundin. He said one of them reminds him of Mario Lemieux, but I think that's a big reach. But if you're able to get an Austin Matthews, if you go Austin Matthews, Seth Jones, and then you have Ryan Murray and you have Bobrovsky, those are the types of pieces that you believe going forward.
Oh, so all of a sudden everyone wants Austin Matthews now. Okay.
No, I'm just
saying. I see how it is, guys.
Bad,
a second ago,
honestly,
it was
Austin
all
Matthews
Leo Komarov,
but...
Stu Percy's the next captain. Here we go.
The last time I saw Flip this excited is when he found out Vinny LeCavalier was going to the LA Kings.
Or,
how exciting was that deal 9 years ago?
Or when I found out Hulk Hogan's sold cigarettes at the bar.
That was a great moment.
Side note, that was only 1 week of smoking. Sorry.
And it was all my fault.
Honestly, I like the Vinny LeCavalier trade.
No,
though.
You don't. You like
Honestly,
the Vinny LeCavalier.
No, you like it because Luke Shen went there, too.
No, yes. I do like. I've always been a firm believer in Luke Shen.
There you go.
But Vinny, if there is any team that he can find any semblance of his previous game, it's going to be LA.
Because they don't demand skating.
Also, he's going to play on the fourth line. He's also going to play on the
he's
fourth line.
He's a great skater. No.
Yeah, on pond hockey.
He's put on about 45 pounds of chub over the past few years.
Ryan Burke would be very displeased in his physical attire.
No, he's... I like the move as well. It's clearly a depth move for LA, who is a team that's perennially considered a cup contender. You always have to consider that team for three guys only. Jonathan Quick, Drew Doughty, and you mentioned the other guy, Ons Kopitar, a very underrated player. They have other stars now, Toffoli, and is Gabrick still there?
Yeah.
So they're stacked. I just look at those three guys. You have John Quick and Drew Doughty on your back end, you're going to be in it every year until those guys start declining, and that hasn't started yet.
But I think LeCavalier also, obviously, is beyond his prime and has lost his game. Mm-hmm. And I think that with the pieces that LA has, it's almost kind of like, obviously, he's not the same caliber as Johansson going to Nashville, but he gets a role that is more suitable for him now, where they won't rely on him, that he will just be there to fill in and be the piece that they need, rather than to be the huge, like, $10 million, 40 goal scorer that they
the pressure's off.
And I think that's exactly what he needed. And I think that Honestly, I think it's a good move. And they only have to pay half his salary.
Sorry about that, Jess. You're bringing some good points to the table. Keep it up over there. You're sitting in AK's spot, by the way. So how's that feel?
I'm trying to just fill the great shoes of Alicon.
She didn't say
shout
big
out
shoes?
Our boy AK, who's playing the producer role today. He's on the ones and twos, so you can thank him for that, for the crunchy beats. But the other move that needs to be mentioned,
Richard Ponick.
Richard Ponick, not so much.
You guys remember that?
Don't press the Ponick button yet.
Morin is so good.
Sorry, Jerry Howarth. I said is Mike Richards being signed to the Caps?
Party
and
time.
Another depth move.
So many more beats in the dressing room. You guys ever seen that 24/7?
He's back on the sauce.
No.
But it's just barbecue, baby.
Yeah, it's barbecue.
Oh, my God. I was worried. I didn't know where you were going to go
I was
with
like,
that.
Okay, we're keeping somebody it hit
PG.
The mute button.
No, we're keeping it, PG.
Do you guys remember the 24/7 with Washington and Pittsburgh?
Like, barely.
Okay,
barely.
So whenever they'd win, they'd play the DJ Pauly D beat that bass.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So all of them are fist pumping in the back, and there's a little shot. Guys, go on YouTube and watch. It's amazing. Mike Knuble is in the back just taking off his elbow pads so bitter that they're listening to, like, beats. And Ovechkin's just like, yeah, man. Like, everyone's so pumped, right? And I just picture, like, Mike Richards is so intriguing to me because I feel like there's a potential of him changing some semblance of culture in that room because you're adding Justin Williams and Mike Richards back together. And I'm not taking Jess looked at me, she's like, oh my God, he's going there. No. I don't mean like the party attitude.
No, I meant like the cult. Yeah, I was like, what culture
no,
do you
like,
want him
yeah,
to
no,
bring?
Not like the 4 a.m. like crushing it out. I mean like they're a leadership tandem. Like when you look at Justin Williams, you think this guy's a winner. When you look at Mike Richards, aside from, you know, the off-ice activities, you think of a guy who's a leader,
a guy who
plays hard. He's a great hockey player.
He's still, and you said it, considered a winner. Yeah. And I think it's that winning attitude that they're trying to instill in there, just in case the Caps hit the skids a bit, and then Ovi and these younger guys, well, Ovi's not a younger guy anymore, but the guys who are maybe 40. A little less experienced in terms of deep cup runs that Washington honestly doesn't have. You can look to guys like Williams and Richards, not even necessarily for scoring, just to be like, Ovi, don't even worry. We got this. You know what I mean?
Been
me and
Justo,
we've been here before.
So is adding Mike Richards a positive or a negative to Washington going forward?
I think it's a positive.
Flip?
And I'm happy to see him back in the league.
I think it's a huge positive. I agree. Big Kitchener Ranger fan. He's a Kitchener Ranger boy. He's been practicing with Kitchener for the past few months. That's where he's been staying in shape. He's made his mistakes. I'm always one to forgive the first time. He's had one slip. He's got his chance to get back in it and hopefully finish his career as a solid NHLer. If he slips again, I've got no time for him, and I don't think anyone in the NHL will, but I love the move, and Washington right now is my pick for the cup.
Well, I mean, there's a potential for success in Washington with the amount of talent there and his lack of needing to have that number one role aside from what he's doing in the room. I mean, it could work in Washington. We also hope it could work for the Raptors in Washington.
Whoa.
They're taking on the Wiz.
Transition.
Guys, I'm good. I'm so good. I'm not even a Segway. I'm a hoverboard.
Wow.
I get across really well.
Those are expensive. Don't lie. You can't afford
that.
I don't
Back to the Future.
Man, how many videos
here?
Have you seen those things explode? I'm not, like, how much are you going to spend on something that explodes like that?
Well, also, no one seems to be able to ride it. Everyone's bailing.
Oh,
P.S. the
Mike Tyson.
Tyson.
Oh,
yeah.
Buddy.
If you guys haven't seen Mike Tyson
down
bailing on the hoverboard,
Tyson.
We'll get that up on the Twitter account because that was worth the chuckle. But
Raptors,
not as much chuckling going on. AK knows we've been hard on this team all year. I did say at the beginning that I thought it was going to be a tough year for the Raptors. Sometimes they come out and play like you think they're ready to take it into a deep playoff run, and then they come out and lose to Cleveland by 22. And how many to Chicago? Something similar, like 25?
Yeah, not nice.
To Chicago? No, they lost by 2 points to Chicago.
No, they got...
They lost in the final minute. I had to rewrite
how many points
game
did they give up?
Sorry.
I think that was the point I was trying to make.
Fun.
Did they give up a ton of points to Chicago? That was the point I was
Jimmy
trying to
Butler
make.
Jimmy Butler got his 40 points.
Yeah, Jimmy
half.
Butler went off. The Raptors were up by 20 or 15.
So I think I think the stat I read was in two games they gave up something like 247 points or something in those two games.
Yeah,
so even if it was a close game in Chicago,
defensively there's
they
been
lost
lapses.
115, 113, wasn't it? Yeah.
So there you go. Tons of points being scored, and I just what concerns me if well, I am a Raptors fan, is the lack of, and we've talked about it, the lack of clutch performances and the lack of seemingly leadership. And I love Kyle Lowry and I love DeMar. I really do love those two players. And I think they've had great years, to be honest, for both of them. I don't know if that's going to be enough.
Well, I mean, the biggest problem, too, I think, for the Raptors, their biggest acquisition this offseason hasn't been there. I mean, for DeMar Carroll, it's not a lack of trying.
No, it's not his fault. He's been unlucky with injuries.
Right, and it's one of those situations where it's better to nip it in the bud now and have him hopefully healthy for when he comes back. But I feel like also the notion is, yeah, but he might get injured again. But the problem is, without DeMar Carroll there, you're losing one of your big defensive stoppers. And yeah, DeMar DeRozan has been fantastic defensively as of late. He's been playing against the guys, other teams' number ones.
Right.
The problem is, though, you want to be able to, like we said early on when the season started, you want to have the ability of insulating your offensive players to kind of let them relax defensively, not have to go toe-to-toe with a number one. That's not happening. The biggest issue I find for the Raptors is a lack of consistency in general.
Mm-hmm.
It might, defensively, I get their structure. I feel like it's going to be there long term. But my biggest issue is I don't see the Raptors play the same game. We said about the Leafs, they play this way. We said about, you know, like even the Blue Jays when we were still talking Jays, they played a specific way. How do the Raptors play basketball? I don't know because it's so inconsistent. I still don't get their vision. What their personality is.
Well, Jess gets to, you know, snack Argentinian style and eat lunch with Luis Scola on the inside tips. So, Jess, what do you think is the issue with this Toronto Raptors team? Their big shot?
Honestly, I can't really pinpoint it. And I don't think, and a lot of writers and stuff haven't been able to pinpoint it. Like, honestly, they lost to the Bulls, they lost to Cleveland, and those are two of the best teams in the East. So, I mean, it's the way they lost. I mean, Chicago, they literally were up by like 14 points with 5 minutes left. My story was done. And then Jimmy Butler went ham and they completely lost it. But it's what happens when they play Chicago. But, I mean, they got blown out of the water by Cleveland, but Cleveland's the best team in the East. So it's hard to say because even if you talk about DeMar Carroll, he was brought in for his defense, and I get he's been nagged by injuries the whole season, but even if you look at analytics and stats and stuff, the Raptors were better defensively when Carroll was on the bench, which is ironic. So
good stat.
And that's exactly why it's so hard to pinpoint what's going on. I mean, usually they have terrible starts and they find their game and like, what did they say last year? We the fourth or something? Because they found their fourth quarter play every time. But it's so hard. DeMar DeRozan is playing the best basketball of his life. Lowry shaved off, 45 pounds? And he's like, and now Corey Joseph gets to take some of the load for him so he won't be running to the ground. Everything's in place for them to have been better, so it's so hard to be able to pinpoint.
But it's still status quo.
And you know what? You made the point that I've been saying to Joe and to AK is I look at it like an enigma team. You know, every reason they should be playing good because I said at the start of the year, too, I expected a big season from DeMar. It's a contract year for him, and he's elevated his game. 22.6 points per game leading the team, almost 3 points per game better than last year. That's pretty solid. Like I said, I don't think it's going to be enough in terms of going up against the teams that we just talked about. If they're going to be considering themselves a top team in the East, they're going to have to need to be beating some of these teams. I know it's regular season. They're going to get into the playoffs. Anything can happen in the playoffs. I just think they really need to come together as a team to get healthy and three, really start to figure it out on the defensive end of the ball because I don't think scoring points is going to be the problem, and clearly it hasn't been. It's been stopping the other team's top guy, stopping the other teams in the fourth quarter, and stepping up when they need someone to step up the most. Those games where, you know, they need a guy to kind of take the ball, take the rock, and do it. It hasn't been there. I don't want to knock on the two guys that we just talked about, DeMar and Kyle, because they've had a great year. But I still think it's going to have to be JV to be that X factor.
Well, it's also a matter of I don't think you can knock on those two because I don't think either one of them have been the weak point or anything
wrong.
No,
they've been amazing.
It's also due to the fact that you had lost JV for 6 weeks. DeMar's been in and out of things, so your lineup is constantly changing and it's trying to, like, you're trying to put JV back in, and then everyone's saying maybe the Biz should be in the starting lineup because the defense that he brings, whatever, but he has zero offense. So
yeah, he deserves some credit because he's played really well.
And it's hard. It's hard to be able to be consistent when you have so many changes happening on a regular basis.
No doubt.
I think, too. So if they ever get healthy, like if Carroll comes back after the All-Star game, JV stays healthy. I mean, Terrence Ross and Patterson have been playing better, but if they find consistency and their bench actually kind of picks it up the way the bench should be able to play, then...
Well, that's the X factor.
Yeah.
I think that's the X factor. When you look at when you look at the Raptors, their biggest issue is that their bench has been probably the most inconsistent, the most consistent of the inconsistencies. Their bench has been unable to insulate their starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough because when you look at guys that are coming off the bench, they have, you look at them and you figure they have perimeter touch, they have the ability to score, then you're assuming they have the ability to shut down defensively. And it's like they can only do one or the other. And it's very, very frustrating to watch. Because the thing is, like Jess, you were saying, when they get their lineup, when this person's healthy, those are not guarantees for the Raptors. I'm probably of the huge minority. I don't believe in Jonas Valanciunas. I don't believe he has...
I don't think that's a huge minority.
I don't. Well,
maybe
I'm
the minority.
We'll see. I mean, I don't think Jonas Valanciunas has that next level to be able to carry the workload
Hold
that
on a
Toronto's
sec.
Assuming.
You don't believe in JV? This is a shocker.
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
Damari Carroll, for me, is starting to fall into the category that I don't want to... It's not a negative connotation, but it's starting to feel a little bit like the whole like Clarkson, Joffrey Lupul thing where...
Whoa.
He came into this team. He wholeheartedly wants to be here. He loves it. He hashtags JYD 2.0. Like Clarkson changed his number from 23 to 71 because he loved Wendell Clark. And he's not working because
you don't sound so ecstatic over there.
Because
Bob.
he's unhealthy, but it's not of his fault. I hope it turns around, but we don't know if that's going to happen. But we know the two variables that are always consistent, DeRozan and Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
They need insulation from their bench. They're not getting it. And until they get it, the Raptors aren't going to be able to turn around.
And I wish
or be more solid.
I wish our NBA insider, Ali Khanrav Johnny, could jump in on this topic, but I look at it like this. Damari Carroll's only been here for not even a half of a season, and you're already seeing how crucial he is to the makeup of the team. They brought him in. They're trying to go back to Dwayne Casey's style of defense first, in my opinion, and Carroll was kind of like the catalyst for that. And him not being able to be there with consistency not only hurts him as getting comfortable with the system, it hurts the team because if they're trying to go through him as the defensive dude, the JYD 2.0, the hype man, the boards, whatever, that's killing them. And now that he's out again for a prolonged time, I don't know what they're going to do in terms of the makeup, their approach, what they're going to do. Are they going to wait it out and hope that he can come back and play good? I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting and going to be tough for the Raps.
Well, they're going to want him to be healthy by the time the playoffs get there, right? That's the key for the Raptors. The Raptors want to get to the playoffs, and then the real season starts.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the bonus of being in the Atlantic. You know at least you can struggle a bit, and you're probably still going to finish fourth.
But it's going to be a tough grind. And, I mean, every playoffs is a tough grind, and you're going to have injuries.
They have to avoid Chicago or Cleveland.
Like,
but see, that's
hold on. Okay. Tough grind like Tony Hawk 50-50 on the rail, or like tough grind like really big chick at the club?
Tough grind like I work in a steel mill.
Wow.
And I hack darts in the mill while steel milling.
A straight McDonald's 67 menthols.
Yeah, like it's harsh. No
filter.
You know, like,
oh my
God. Like that kind of grind.
Okay, so but real tough.
Real, real tough.
Okay.
But like, for the Raptors, the biggest problem is always says, oh, they need to not play a good team. Like,
yeah, that's ridiculous. It's, but it's true.
It's true. Because, you know why? Because the big
At least
teams,
not in the first round.
Oh, okay. Just so they can get
well, can
through
we
the
get
first
past
round.
The first
that's
round?
All we need,
just
eh?
For,
yeah.
Like, I could use some confidence, personally.
It could
but,
help.
You know, it could be a boost in confidence.
It could help.
You
but
know,
listen, the playoffs.
Go ahead, Joe.
The playoffs are tough. The
Put
Raptors
a bow on this
get
for
there.
Us.
The Raptors will get there. Will they be dominant? Will they be able to win a round? We hope. But when you look at the teams that they could face off against, we thought they could beat the Wiz. They couldn't. The playoffs are a different beast.
Wow.
And the playoffs are going to be a very cold beast. for the Minnesota Vikings
ouch.
And the Green Bay Packers.
Well, it
you guys
is,
love it. It's pretty good,
it,
guys.
It was decent. It was decent. It could have been a little tighter, but I like where you're going.
As tight as the Green Bay offensive line?
Okay, I'll give you that one. That was better. That was better.
Jazz is having none of it.
But
okay, I'm going to write your headlines from now on.
We're going to switch gears, head over to the gridiron. It is wild card weekend in the NFL. Playoffs are kicking off. They kick off Saturday afternoon with the Kansas City Chiefs visiting the Houston Texans.
How is that even? Sorry, I can't believe.
No,
the
I
Houston
agree.
Texans
no,
are
you
playing
know what? We don't give
so
too
much.
Much.
Neither can I.
Like, if you had the Kansas City Chiefs versus the Houston Texans, like, how in God's name is that happening?
Well,
they both suck. Like, Houston
hey,
lost Jamal
hey,
Charles,
hey, hey.
And they're playing great.
Run?
Guys,
it's ridiculous.
Yo,
it blows my mind.
Joe, stop yelling at
I'm
me.
Sorry.
One,
I'm sorry.
Don't appreciate that. Thank you. Second of all, I have some stats to hit you guys with
stat
about
man.
This Kansas City Houston matchup.
Does that guy actually do his job?
He did do his job. He texted me last night. He appreciated the pizza we sent him.
Boom.
So now he's doing his job.
Finally.
But the interesting thing about these matchups is, one, Kansas City started the year at 1-5. Then run the table at 10-0 to finish the season. Make the playoffs, becoming only
franchise
the second
record,
team
it?
Ever in NFL history
yeah,
to start 1-5 and make the playoffs. Who did their first win of the season come against? The Houston Texans in Houston, 27-10. The second game, much better game on Saturday. Cincinnati at the Steelers. Steelers at Cincy.
Yeah.
That's a North Division rivalry. It's going to be exciting football. Look, playoff football is intense. These guys go hard all year long, but they literally lay it all on the line. And we don't talk a lot about NFL. The playoffs deserve a little bit of light on this show, if you will, just because, honestly, each year that I watch, I'm never disappointed. Saturday's matchups maybe not as flashy. You look to Sunday, though, Seattle is playing Minnesota and Green Bay is playing Washington. Those are going to be some solid games.
I think it's going to be epic when Minnesota and Green Bay go off in the tundra. Like, it's going to be minus 18 Fahrenheit,
no, no.
Guys.
It's Seattle. Mine. Seattle's in mini, but.
Oh, sorry. Seattle in mini. I apologize.
It's going to be minus 19 at kickoff Celsius. Oh, no, Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah, 100%. Like, Jess, would you like to work this story? Nope. I like my hands.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. But for me, in that game, I look at. Like, Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson are going to be the keys there.
For
sure. Because you're going to have a run game.
100%. And I want to, before we get into Flip's picks, you're talking about the cold for Seattle, Minnesota. This has got to be an advantage for Minnesota. Seattle traveling to the state of, what state is Minnesota? It's Minnesota, right?
Minnesota?
Thank you.
That's it.
Yeah,
Minnesota.
Minnesota. We're going with that.
The cities are like Minneapolis.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, so they're traveling to Minnesota, and it's going to be frigid. Seattle is like balmy compared to what it is there.
I think it's cold.
Not really.
Not mine.
It's like Vancouver cold. It's like 5 and rainy.
Oh, yeah, that's fake cold.
It's going to be a huge advantage, I think, for Minnesota. They're going to hammer the ball to AP. But you never know. You never know, Joe.
Well, Flip, you apparently know. That's the thing. That's why we have the pick segment.
You never know what you can count on, but you can count on a couple of solid picks in the Flip's pick segment. And, hey, it's that time of the show, people.
Boom.
I'm going to hit you with two solid picks for the Saturday football matchups. It's Wild Card Saturday. I've done my research, people. Like I said, the Kansas City Chiefs ran the table at the end of the season, winning their last 10 games straight to make the playoffs. You can't bet against this team at this point. They're too good. They're rolling. And Houston just struggles on the offensive side of the ball. They've had quarterbacks like Whedon in there this year. They don't have enough offensive weapons to go up against Kansas City. If Kansas City's secondary can hold DeAndre Hopkins to a limited game, I could see this being a steamroll for Kansas City. The line is currently at -3 for KC. Jump all over that. Take the Chiefs -3. I think they win by at least a touchdown. There's your first one for the afternoon game. Taking a look at the night game, Pittsburgh Steelers in Cincinnati to face an Andy Dalton-less Cincinnati Bengals, which to me is the X factor in this game. The line opened up at 2, favoring the Steelers, gone up as high as 5, has gone back down to 3. The Pittsburgh Steelers have arguably the best quarterback wide receiver combo in the NFL right now with Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. The Cincinnati Bengals secondary are going to have all kinds of trouble dealing with that. Not to mention A.J. McCarron, the backup, is at the helm in his first playoff game for the Bengals. They're going to have to rely heavily on tight end Tyler Eifert and wideout A.J. Green. I do not think they will have enough firepower to go toe-to-toe with Antonio Brown and Big Ben. The line's at -3. Hammer that all day. I can see this game getting out of hand early. Take the Pittsburgh Steelers for my second flips pick, and that's a lock, boys. Put a bow on it.
And before we leave, over and under 6.5 times they show A.J. McCarron's wife.
Definitely hoping for the over because she's a fox. Boom. Oh,
thanks so much for listening, guys. This has been episode 29
of Joe Carter.
Sports of a Joe Carter episode.
Boom. Going thought about that one in the shower.
Back. Thanks for joining us for Flip Livingstone and our lovely Sports from the Six writer. And I think she writes, yep, for the Toronto Sun.
Yep.
There we go.
Jess Patton, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ryan.
I'm Joe Narsa. Thanks for listening. Oh!